Welcome to the IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast for couples who struggle with infertility and want to fulfill their dreams of becoming parents. In this podcast, you'll learn actionable strategies to deal with infertility from Dr. Michael Chapman, or Prof as he's affectionately known. Prof is the co-founder of IVF Australia and is a leading Australian infertility specialist who has helped over 3,000 couples realise their dreams of becoming parents. To access previous episodes packed with ideas, solutions and tips that actually work, head over to Dr. Chapman's IVF podcast on iTunes. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him, michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.
That first cry of a baby born after the long journey of IVF remains one of the most beautiful experiences in the world. As an obstetrician and an IVF specialist, I've had the privilege of experiencing this over many thousands of times in my long career, but I still remain moved by each baby's first cry. It signifies the end of a long journey and the beginning of a new life. This is Professor Michael Chapman, co-founder of IVF Australia and host of the IVF Journey podcast. Thanks for tuning in. To access all the previous episodes, head over to my website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu. You'll also be able to find the various services that we provide at IVF Australia. So today we're going to talk about the worst case scenario for men, a sperm test that comes back showing no sperm. This occurs in about 1% of all couples who come to see me in the infertility clinic. So it's not that common. The first question is, was that sample a reliable representation of what went on? I generally ask that the sample was collected appropriately, that the sperm or the semen actually ended up in the receptacle, the pot. And I've certainly had men who've struggled to get that right, or at least getting all the sample in there. In fact, it usually doesn't matter if not all of it gets in there, because we're looking at concentrations rather than volumes. To have no sperm, we start looking for reasons. That's, of course, after repeating a test to confirm the first one was valid. The causes of no sperm start with a genetic abnormality that does not endow the testicle with the cells that are going to divide and produce sperm. There's something called Sertoli cell-only syndrome. Unfortunately, for those men, there's very little that can be done. Donor sperm is going to be the way forward for them to have children. The next category are patients where sperm production is occurring, but the sperm can't get out. So there's an obstruction between the testicle and the various tubes that take it from the testicle to the penis to ejaculation. Those abnormalities can be an abnormal epididymis, which is one part of the collecting apparatus within the testicle, the tube between the testicle and the prostate, called the vas deferens, and that can be absent in a particular genetic abnormality associated with lung disease called cystic fibrosis. And then within the prostate, there can be valves that act to prevent sperm escape at the time of ejaculation. And anywhere along that tubal system, there can be blockages caused by infection, in particular gonorrhea. For that group of men, there can sometimes be surgery to join the tubes together and bypass the blockage. The valves can be cut away. But for the majority in this obstructive group, the way forward will be to harvest sperm from either the epididymis or the testicle itself. The techniques involved in that range from a needle biopsy of the testicle through to open surgery using a microscope to search for sperm. The next group of abnormalities are those associated with specific abnormalities of the sex chromosomes. So the normal sex chromosomes for a male are XY. There is a condition called Klinefelter's syndrome where there is an extra X chromosome. So they are XXY. And the outcome for that group are men with testicles that do not produce sufficient sperm, or the connections through to transporting that sperm don't exist. Up to 10 years ago, or maybe even 5 years ago, men with Klinefelter's were told they should have donor sperm to produce a baby. Now, with the microsurgical dissection techniques, over 50% of Klinefelter's men can be found to produce sperm, and that those sperm can be harvested and then used with IVF to produce a baby. If that's the case, however, we need to do genetic testing on those embryos, because there is the possibility of passing that on to the next generation of males. There's another aberration, even rarer, of men with an extra Y chromosome, the XYY male. They tend to have low sperm counts rather than azoospermia, no sperm, but they can present with infertility. So there are multiple reasons for lack of sperm. Another reason is that the pituitary gland, which produces the hormones that stimulate spermatogenesis, that push the production line, are not being secreted appropriately. Their levels are low. These men with low levels of the hormones from the pituitary are called hypogonadotrophic hypogonadism. These are rare conditions, but they are one of the few conditions that the use of drugs can improve sperm production. So by giving injections of FSH and LH, sperm production can be switched on. But it's a long process. Normal spermatogenesis, from the commencement to the production of a mature sperm, is something in the order of 90 days. So injections have to go on for quite some time. The cause of the hypo-hypo situation can be genetic, but increasingly I'm seeing men who have hypo-hypo because their pituitary gland has been switched off by drugs. Those drugs are the steroids and the testosterone that men are picking up in gyms to improve their masculinity, their muscle bulk. So for their egos, what they've achieved is switching off spermatogenesis. In most cases, it's reversible spontaneously over 6 to 12 months after stopping the use of these drugs. But for some men, they will also need stimulation with hormones to reinstitute spermatogenesis. I mentioned earlier the various techniques to retrieve sperm. Men undergoing the simpler techniques of needling the testicles to find sperm can be done under local anaesthetic. Personally, I think I'd prefer to be asleep. The testis is not an insensitive organ. It takes a strong man to do it under simple local anaesthetic. And the procedure may require multiple needlings of the testicle to find sufficient sperm to be used in the IVF scenario. So most procedures are done under a general anaesthetic, and certainly every procedure involving microdissection requires that approach. In microdissection, the testicle is removed from the scrotum, the testicle is opened, and under microscopy, we look for the various tiny areas of the testicle where normal spermatogenesis is occurring. We can identify that because of the tubular structures that can be found within the fibrous tissue of the testicle. They can then be harvested, and that our scientists can identify sperm, and then the testicle is reconstituted, stitched together, and the male will be sore for a week or so after that, but eventually things will settle down. Both those procedures have risks, infection being one, bleeding is another at the time of the procedure, and I've certainly seen very bad bruising after these procedures. but these are rare complications. I tell the men that they'll walk like John Wayne, whatever the procedure is, for the next few days. It's quite uncomfortable afterwards. But the goal of finding sperm makes it all worthwhile, if we can find it. And of the various causes of azoospermia, if we do testicular biopsies, the success rates range from 30% through to almost 100% in men post-vasectomy. The post-vasectomy group are an interesting group because there is the other option, which is to reverse the vasectomy. And I regularly have a conversation with those men as to what they want to do. The success rate with spontaneous pregnancy after reversal of vasectomy, the reconstitution of the tube, results in pregnancies between 30 and 50% of the time. The reason it is low as that is that once the vasectomy has occurred, the man starts to produce antibodies to sperm, which make them clog up, bind together, and make them not be able to swim. So that's why spontaneous pregnancy is relatively low. The other problem with having your vasectomy reversed, if you do turn out to be fertile, is that you then have to use contraception afterwards or have another vasectomy. So the alternative then is not to have it reversed and to have a needle biopsy to produce the specimen of sperm that will allow the partner to have a baby. For those men, the odds of finding sperm are extremely high because vasectomy doesn't change the hormonal environment or the production line in the testicle. So that's a review for the man who's told he doesn't have any sperm. It's a very emotional moment when that news is broken to the couple. The women are particularly upset because it would seem there's no chance of them ever getting pregnant. But that's definitely not the case in modern IVF. For more information about this issue and any other fertility issue, please go to my website, theivfjourney.com. And don't forget that you can access all the previous episodes by going to our website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu.
Thank you for listening to The IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast which helps couples negotiate their way through the IVF journey, all the way to parenthood. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.